Welcome to the Evolution Eats podcast. Today we have a fascinating subject to cover, and that is something that's relatively topical. It's been in the news recently, thankfully. We have sustainable, novel, non-meat meat products. We have essentially plant-based meats nowadays, although they resemble their animal-based counterparts from years past. And thanks to Impossible Foods and the Beyond Meat Company, we've seen these products go coast to coast and international. They're available in grocery stores and restaurants all over the place. We've both eaten them. We like them. We know there are differences between the taste of what we're seeing in these products and ordinary meat products from animals. But the future is bright here, and there are other market segments that will soon be tapped into with sustainable dairy that's not from cows and other dairy producing animals. We're going to see sustainable fish that's not from fish in the oceans, and then we'll see eventually lab-grown foods. That's an entirely different topic we might cover later, which concerns foods that we can actually produce entirely synthetically or with components that are easier to manufacture. All of these avenues take us toward a planetary future that is much, much, much more sustainable and much better for the health of those living on the planet and for the planet itself. That's why this makes for a fantastic, fantastic topic. So to lead into this, the first thing we can do is discuss what goes into an Impossible Burger or to a Beyond Meat Burger. And for that, Emily can help us with direct content from those companies. So what's in each of those?
Okay, so
we're scrolling through their brilliant, colorful advertising right now, looking for the ingredients page that used to be easy to find, but is now not as easy. And that is interesting because it sort of means that they've transitioned the way that they think about their own company, and now they're no longer advertising just to people like us, but they are advertising instead to people all over the map. Those interested in health, in nutrition, in protecting the planet, and everything.
Okay, here we go. Learn about the science. Heme and the science behind Impossible.
As you may or may not know, dear listeners, the Impossible Burger is made by extracting heme, which is a component in blood of most creatures. It can actually be extracted from soybeans instead, and that gives the meat the ability to artificially bleed, just like real meat would, and give it a sort of texture and a taste that really much more closely resembles a meat product than any previous vegetarian burger could match. The actual meat components that go into a burger are chiefly, in the case of the Impossible Burger, based on coconut, potato starch, a little bit of salt and other herbs and minerals, but the really core components that make up the bulk of the product are from coconut and potato, surprisingly.
So I found the Nutrition Facts label, which is kind of interesting. They advertise 19 grams of protein, 0 milligrams of cholesterol. There's 240 calories in a 4-ounce burger, or, you know, Impossible Burger. So I wonder how that compares to a 4-ounce, like, regular meat burger in terms of calories and nutrition. That might be interesting.
I was able to find the nutrition in a regular burger, and that's around 335 calories, which puts the Impossible Burger at just under 2/3, so you're already reducing your fat content by at least 30 to 40% or so. It absolutely seems that you could potentially see nutrition benefits even before you talk about the sustainability benefits of the Impossible Burger.
Yeah, and a lot of nutritionists will say, you know, it's not like just because it's vegan or, you know, just because it's good for the environment, it's not more nutritious, you know, so we have to pay attention to that as well. And that's true, but looking at these nutrition facts, it's a little bit better for you overall, I think. And do you think that that's, like, the market segment for these type of foods? Do you think that people, I mean, I think everybody knows, you know, that burgers are kind of unhealthy, and I don't really think that Impossible Burgers and Beyond Burgers are necessarily claiming to be a healthy alternative. I think they're claiming to be a more environmentally friendly alternative, and I think that's really who they're marketing to and what the main purpose of it is. You know, a regular burger is not healthy to eat all the time either, but once in a while, you know, when you have something that is really similar in the nutritional content and is also much better for the environment, I think that's what really the goal of Impossible Meats and Beyond Burgers are going after.
Unfortunately, we've already seen some articles in recent press, I believe from October of 2019, that critiqued the burger for not being healthy, without mentioning the environmental sustainability, the huge environmental benefits of these items. And we looked more into the sources behind these articles, and it was pretty clear that they were an attempt to distract from the environmental mission of these companies and either to do some sort of brand damage or brand sabotage, because the reason these burgers were invented was not to provide a nutritional substitute that was supposed to be some sort of magic bullet for health. It was to replace an animal product and create something much more sustainable for people and for the environment. Any health benefits I think that we're seeing are largely not the core benefits that we're even looking for, that we're even the objective of creating these products. At their center, both of these items represent between 10 and 12, perhaps more fold reduction in greenhouse gas emissions during food production. So if you look at what it takes to create one of these burgers versus to create a burger from a cow, it is dramatically, dramatically more sustainable for the environment. It involves fewer resources. It involves much, much, much less water. And it involves no killing of animals. So it's much more humane.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to look at the nutrition, but obviously I think the environmental sustainability of these choices is really in the forefront of these companies' missions. Now I think it's interesting to look at the difference in the ingredients between the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger in terms of, like, their core ingredients. So in the Impossible Burger, soy is really the main ingredient.
For flavor.
For flavor. I guess heme. Heme mm-hmm. is a big part. Mm-hmm. We could talk about the heme, too. That's really important. But the reason, according to the VP of Nutrition and Health at Impossible Foods, the soybean was researched extensively and chosen among plants for its high-quality protein. Quality meaning, from a nutritional point of view, lots of digestible amino acids. So the soy protein concentrate is the ingredient that provides most of the protein in the Impossible Burger. And soy is rich in fiber and is also a good source of many essential nutrients in addition to protein. Something I think is interesting is that soy, like the agriculture around soy in the United States, is not particularly sustainable. So I still think that it's a more sustainable option, but I don't know. I guess I could look into it. I don't necessarily know that Impossible Foods tells us, is transparent with us about where they get their soy.
Because of the amount of raw material that's now required to make the many, many, many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of burgers that are going out into the public these days, Impossible Foods had to dramatically scale up their operations, and it should still be noted that whatever they are doing is still very sustainable, but it is abundantly clear that, and often critiqued nowadays, certainly in the past year, that they are using a GMO process to acquire the heme from the soybeans that they're farming. So the real critique here is not so much environmental on the side of the nutrition or environmental on the side of animal cruelty now, but environmental on the side of what is going into this soy crop that then becomes this critical ingredient in the burger. I think it's important to note that a lot of the biomass of the burger is actually coming from potato starch and from other things like coconut and beet and other plant biomass. But and that actually is farmed sustainably, not through GMO means. But if there are GMO components in the Impossible Burger, it's likely that there are, then that still is an important environmental factor. It's just not the end of the world, because that product is still going to be much more sustainable. And again, we are not against GMOs in the sense that there's any health risk. There are just a huge number of economic and environmental factors that become agents of risk when discussing how agriculture exists around GMOs.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out, because I think we're going to discuss this more in the future. We have a lot of opinions about GMOs, and I just think, you know, just not to nitpick too much, but you said like GMO sort of, I think you said something about GMO as opposed to sustainable, and I think that's a topic that really interests me. Can we do GMOs in a sustainable way? So we'll come back to that at some point. I am noting on their website, the Impossible Foods website, that they say that the soy they use has been screened for over 300 pesticide residues, including glyphosate, and none have been detected. So that's kind of interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, it doesn't necessarily prove that the process is non-GMO, but it proves that there's not a lot of pesticides on it.
It's excellent marketing. And to be clear, we eat this burger and we promote the eating of this burger, although this episode is in no way funded by either of these companies or anything related to them. I think it's interesting that they cannot advertise the product as being non-GMO, although it's entirely possible they have not sought the framework, they've not sought the oversight needed to get those certifications. That's another thing we can discuss in future episodes. So it's entirely possible they've advanced into this new sort of food territory that makes it a little challenging to get certifications that might be simpler for more traditional food.
Yeah, and so, you know, going off of that GMO topic, the Beyond Meat burger can advertise that they're non-GMO, and that's an interesting difference there. They also can say that they don't use soy and they don't have gluten, so that's sort of targeting a different sort of segment of people, potentially a little bit. So if some people, there's a lot of people, soy is in so many things now, and I have actually a friend who's allergic to soy, and gluten intolerance is very common, so you know, I think that's interesting that the Beyond Burger markets without GMO, soy, or gluten.
If you're hunting for the ingredient list there, you'll find pea protein, mung bean protein, rice protein, and then canola and coconut oil. And then you'll find color from beet juice instead of from the soy heme. So there really is actually a surprisingly different ingredient list, although I think Beyond Burger the Beyond Meat Company has done a lot to make their burger very, very, very tasty. I'm not sure if they're just cashing in on the right sort of hype train right now, but I think there's a lot to compare here. And it makes a lot of sense that in using more traditional ingredients, they were able to get those certification labels that Impossible was not able to get, or at least has not gotten yet as of this episode.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we should leave this for a later episode, but I noticed that like the Beyond Burger has the non-GMO project label, and we recently discussed sort of the questionable nature of that label.
We will get into that later, although I will say that just in context of the Beyond Meat products, they feature very minimal advertising, but very prominently display that label on their packaging. So aside from the very simple, hopefully sustainable cardboard packaging, you're going to see their company name, the product information, and then that label along with not much other information. So they are very, very excited to declare that their products do contain no ill-advised additives or pesticides, and they have followed that guideline to acquire that label. But we do not think that is a huge contributor, let's say, to nutrition or flavor or really the overall presence of this burger in the food space now. We think it's competing with Impossible because it tastes pretty good and because it's available in lots of places that Impossible may not be. It's on more grocery store shelves in more places.
Yeah, I guess I do find it kind of interesting that it's much easier on the Beyond Meat site to find the ingredients immediately, and that could have something to do with the fact that there's a lot of controversy around the GMOs and the fact that it's this heme that's actually genetically modified, is that correct?
I think, yeah, that is correct. And so what's interesting is Impossible Foods definitely owns the intellectual property behind the process and the ingredients they're now extracting, or certainly at least the process. And they're probably trying to keep fairly close to the belt, fairly close to the chest, what is actually in this really, really critical piece of the flavoring of their burger. If they were to publish exactly how they were able to acquire the heme, it would probably lead to some corporate sabotage, or at least some competitors attempting to replicate what they have. So the less they talk about the actual hard science behind that extraction process, the better they're able to protect legally, ethically, functionally, chemically, what they've created. And that flavor is then what they project in their marketing as being very important. And we've definitely, I think, seen the media really miss this. I think we have a scientific background, so we're able to look at this a little bit, but we've definitely noticed that in media portrayal, Impossible Foods are seen as this new fancy industry because they were able to really, really closely replicate this meat flavor, and that really hadn't been tried before with this kind of process.
Have you tried? We've tried both of these, right? Do you think that the Impossible Burger tastes more like meat?
I've eaten both of these many times. I would say as of this episode, I've eaten the Impossible Burger probably 6 times. And I've eaten Beyond Burgers, even in my own kitchen, probably 10 to 15 times, along with Beyond Sausage products. Right, once so again,
you're the expert.
No sponsorship, but I have sampled the goods.
Yeah.
And so there is a pretty distinct flavor difference. I would say Beyond Meat has been able to do a lot with texture, a lot with pricing, a lot with reliability and their supply chain, a lot with creating a reliable product that where everything tastes exactly like the last one. Whereas with the Impossible Burger, a lot of that has come to me through restaurants in my area. It's not available in grocery stores quite yet, although it is available already in fast food restaurants and grocery stores around the nation as of fall 2019. So the Impossible Burger itself, as far as flavor goes, is a different experience. I would absolutely compare the flavor to meat. I would compare it to something like a meatloaf or something where the meat has been ground up and flavored in interesting ways. It is definitely meaty tasting, and while it doesn't completely resemble the exact texture of a steak, of course, or of really high-grade ground beef, you can see what it's going for, and combined with other pieces of a food dish, such as a good bun and lettuce and ketchup and tomato, etc., etc., you are able to really achieve something that is very, very close to a meaty burger, and that is something that you will distinctly notice is not there in the Beyond Meat product. You're going to see it tastes very, very good, but it tastes like a very, very good veggie burger. So you get a lot of wins on texture and reliability, and it does taste very good, but it's pretty clear what it is. Interestingly, in the Beyond Sausage product, I think they've actually achieved something really fascinating through either a new cooking process or engineering process that seems to make that meat product taste a lot more like traditional sausages or some formulations of meat. Who knows whether it is in part of the step that they're doing or how it cooks out, but people often say that they taste a whole lot like either chicken sausages or beef sausages in some way, pork sausages, and the way that those then get flavored and cooked actually is pretty comparable. So each company has a pretty appealing product on their hands and has certainly been able to market as such.
Which one do you like better?
In burger form, we're not endorsing either. In burger form, I think the Impossible Burger has something really appealing going on about it. I think I feel very much that I am like almost eating a meat product when I eat that burger. I think the Beyond Burger tastes pretty healthy and very, very good, but it's a different sort of flavor. So in terms of burgers, that difference is pretty clear. It goes to Impossible. In terms of the overall meat product offerings, I think accessibility and regularity of the product, I think Beyond's got some really interesting stuff going on there. And the sausage product, I think, is really a winner as well, which Impossible Foods has not yet tried. So they both have pretty distinct advantages going in right now.
Yeah, so I haven't tried them as many times as Noah. I think I've only tried each of them once, and I am a meat eater, so I do prefer the Impossible one. I think with the heme, it just tastes a lot more like meat. But obviously, both of them are great. They're doing great things. As of right now, I still eat like a meat burger every once in a while because to me it doesn't taste the same. I limit my meat consumption, but I still think it's a great option. I mean, I absolutely think it's a great option for people.
One of the things that I'll also point out is as these products expand to be offered in more and more locations, and recently as Burger King took up the mantle of the first fast food restaurant to sell the Impossible Burger, that's great for getting the word out, but it does present an ethical and economic issue because I am chiefly concerned about which kind of companies and which companies overall will be able to control the future of food on planet Earth. Burger King has shown they have a decades-long willingness to use extensive, cruel factory farming. And this is not editorializing at all. They are a massive fast food chain, and they have wreaked havoc on the environment. This is scientific fact. So going into this and seeing them just this year having this strange environmental change of heart, shouldn't cover over the bad things that they've done, but it should be seen as a positive step for the planet that they're getting more people, and even perhaps this imaginary target audience of meat eaters, of traditionally animal product meat eaters, to now switch at least part of their diet to this sustainable product. The Impossible Burgers that are being served at Burger King are the same Impossible Burgers that are being served at fancy restaurants in the Bay Area. So it's pretty clear that that has an environmental impact, which is positive. Now, what ingredients are going into the burger after, as far as, you know, what tomato and lettuce and ketchup and bun and accoutrement are being added on later, that is, I think, still something we should be concerned about and something nobody should immediately forgive fast food restaurants for still using bad versions of. But overall, it's a positive trend. We just have to be very, very, very careful. We have to be careful in who we start praising for their sustainable actions when they have a decades-long history of attempting to destroy the environment and often succeeding. Fast food restaurants are massive, massive consumers of the items that go into their menus and end up contributing to literally many millions of tons of unsustainable farming.
So I think that perhaps we touched on this in the episode with Emily from Emily Eats. We kind of, Noah and I, you know, disagree a little bit here. I think this is a really good thing for the environment, and the fact that Burger King is using its power, to do, I think, a good thing, you know, shouldn't be dismissed immediately. I mean, I agree, we're going to link to some articles about the really horrible environmental impacts that Burger King has had over the years. But I don't know. I just think the way that our economic system is set up right now, companies are just incentivized to do whatever brings in the money, right? So
precisely, and that seems to be why Burger King made this decision. They saw this move as very trendy, and they knew it would be profitable for them. I don't think they are even projecting the sustainability of this product as its selling point. They are projecting its novelty as its selling point.
That's probably right, but that's probably because that's not their customer base. Right. I mean, you have to market to your customer base. Yeah, I mean, I just think maybe it's like a larger, I think I put less of the blame on like the company and more on like the larger economic system and incentive structures, perhaps.
Certainly. I mean, much like BP expanding to now be in the solar energy industry, we have to be very cautious in looking at which companies have gone from controlling huge, huge parts of the unsustainable economy to now controlling huge, huge parts of the sustainable economy. As that transition happens, look at who's in charge. It's the very same people responsible for massive environmental devastation. That cannot be overstated, and we're not overstating it. We are stating it perhaps barely enough. When we empower those kinds of people with new resources and praise in the new green economy, hopefully, we are perhaps making a dangerous mistake. So it's interesting that they've chosen to do this now. It's certainly better than doing nothing, but it's definitely wrong to forget all of the past evils, all of the past influences they had on our planet and on our culture, on the health of our overall culture, on our civilization. That is a huge piece of why we started this podcast, to transform the way that people eat. If it's the same bad players in this industry that are now selling us new products for their novelty rather than any sense of environmental protection, I think everyone's missed the point. I think that there's still a lot of work to do, and the actual climate goals, the actual planet protection and biosphere protection goals that we should have as a species are going to be missed.
That's a good point. However, I think we should be educating the general public about climate change, for sure. And that would be great if they chose products based on their sustainability, but I don't think the average consumer is there yet. And so if we can get them to choose something that's more sustainable without it being, but even if it's not for the reason of being more sustainable, I think that's a win.
Yeah, one of the big factors here is can we take people who are now contributing to a lot of factory farming and a lot of meat consumption, a lot of carbon emissions, can we transform those least sustainable consumers into sustainable consumers? If that is the question we are asking, and perhaps that does meet the goal I discussed earlier, if that is the question we are asking, then this change absolutely tackles the problem close to its roots. Not at the roots, because the root would, of course, be looking at who controls overall food systems, but it is definitely making a difference, and at scale is saving on the order of hundreds of thousands to millions of pounds and eventually tons of food waste and of potentially very, very dangerous gases from entering the atmosphere. So the environmental benefit is pretty clear. The environmental benefit is definitely noticeable based on what we've seen.
Because you tend to be against genetically engineering, at least in the context of how it's being used now, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't seem to have a problem with the genetically engineered heme because of your strong convictions about sustainability.
Here at Evolution Eats, we will frequently discuss the nature of GMOs in the context of sustainability, and it's because it matters.
It's an interesting topic, and we debate about it.
And it's being discussed almost every day in media, and we have a unique position in that we understand this issue better than most. And we're here to say GMOs are not the devil. GMOs are not the number one source of evil in the world. But the companies that control the vast majority of them right now might be a real source of environmental damage. And we need to look at entire value chains, entire environmental pictures, to understand the full implications of this technology. It's very, very simple to say GMOs cause very little to no health risk. That is scientifically true, and scientists will come out and say that because that is scientifically true. The problem is that debate ignores the fact that environmentally they can be devastating. Economically, they can be devastating. Socially.
Well, you just said health-wise. The prevailing wisdom now is that they're okay health-wise.
I did say health-wise, but health in the sense of environmental health and contextual health in the environment, meaning not from the direct consumption of GMO products or GMO foods, but human health and animal health surrounding the farming of GMO products.
That's a good clarification. What I was going to say is it's hard for the public and just in general, I think, for people to grasp this, but I really think that we need to be looking at genetically modified foods on an individual level. I mean, it's hard because people want to make generalizations about things and say, oh, it's good or bad, you know? And even I do that. I think that the potential of the science is really powerful. And like, for example, I'm interested in working in the international development space where genetically modified foods are being created that are climate smart. So you can use less water and less resources with these new crops, you know? Yeah, I mean, that's particularly relevant to this discussion on sustainability. I mean, then again, though, we have to assess the whole, like, overall environmental impact. I mean, if we're breeding a crop for a specific gene, you know, that even if it would reduce the amount of water that is required, does that overall reduce the biodiversity in the farm? So I think it's complicated, and I really think we need to look at genetically modified things and foods just on an individual basis.
I think that's a great point. A lot of the backlash against the technology has been systemic, and if we tackle things issue by issue, food by food, piece by piece, we will get a much more scientific and a much more useful conversation. In the context of the Impossible Burger, it certainly seems that if they are using a GMO crop for this, it is likely in the best interest of the planet in this specific instance. Now, we don't know all the information about this because we aren't going to be allowed to know. It's very possible that Impossible Foods protects these crops or, in fact, completely controls them. So that's the kind of reality we deal with when you have a really new technology that is very highly scientific and highly processed, even if the net environmental benefit, it seems, as far as carbon production, as far as simplicity of the supply chain to get that food from the facility or farm where it is grown and produced to the end user, if that chain is more sustainable, it may or may not be related to the overall sustainability of the product.
Well, I think we covered a lot here. I want to sort of circle back to the Beyond Meat and Impossible Burgers. And once again, they're just two examples, but they're sort of industry leaders in this realm. And so we wanted to focus on those first.
So what we found is there certainly is some information coming to us about these products. And overall, we love how sustainable they are. It's definitely the right direction for food. But what I've been noticing is something that a few journalists, and this is from Vox, actually, have uncovered. Essentially, what we have are these new sustainable products designed to fit this really important cultural niche, at least in the Western world. And that is the burger, or the fast food burger. It should strike us all as a bit odd that these first revolutionary products are burgers, because it probably means that certainly Americans and many Westerners in general just eat too many burgers and eat far too much fast food. And so to have this large impact, companies were forced to or felt that the best thing they could do is make a more sustainable burger. That overall trend is perhaps the most important lesson or facet we can really try to approach here, because if we don't think about our overall food trends, our overall cultural diets, this sort of effort really isn't going to be as effective as it could be.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, I mean, from a nutritional perspective, I mean, it's true that we shouldn't be eating burgers a lot, like as much as we are in general. However, it does represent, I mean, that's why it represents a large market segment to influence a lot of people, because the average American eats so much
meat.
And
they are delicious.
So, right, and they're delicious, and, you know, it's definitely good. I mean, I feel like I've been nitpicking them, and I definitely support what these companies are trying to do. Overall, it reduces environmental impacts from meat significantly. Something that the one last comment I think that Noah made me think of is changing individual foods does have a really profound impact, but you know, changing what we really, I think maybe we should be focusing just as much or even more on focusing the culture around, changing the culture around diets as a whole.
So an important lesson we could actually think about learning from this is that we should encourage other companies to start up and to keep working on forming ideas around different sorts of foods and creating even more potentially ideologically interesting and dietarily interesting foods that can enter Western diets more easily, so that we can actually transition entire forms of consumption to more sustainable sources and not just one product segment or one type of meal.
That's a really good point, but this is what I was thinking of. Meat is an interesting product because by nature it's very unsustainable. So it's like there's not a whole, like, vegetables and fruit, I mean, you can't, there's no market there. You don't need to make it more sustainable. The only way you can make it more sustainable is, you know, is to, you know, maybe purchase it locally, source it locally, or for example. But there's something to be done there in terms of processing. So that's kind of interesting. Like, if we wanted to complete, that's another potential argument against these things. I mean, they are processed.
There are minimal steps, certainly, in fruit and vegetable processing. There is some, but certainly much less than a prepared food.
Well, that's interesting. What kind of processing referring to?
There's certainly still industrial farming that goes into vegetable production, fruit production, and sure, that can be dramatically reduced. You can talk about changing the way that a food travels from the farm to the store, and that could go from being a truck powered by gas to a truck powered by electricity.
Okay, yeah, I think this is another topic. How do we, what does the word process mean? What does processing food mean? But we think these are a great, these plant-based alternatives are a great step toward reducing overall carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions. This is one way we can target sort of the average consumer and have the average consumer live more sustainably, whether or not they know it.
And you can already tell that these sorts of conversations lead to other related branching topics, and that's exactly what these sorts of projects and these sorts of foods can do. That's one of their most powerful points, is that they can start better conversations. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.